All right, it's another episode of Blueprint. Thank you guys for listening, subscribing, liking. Welcome back to the show. Today we've got Tiff in Tech, a very special guest. She is crushing it. I cannot wait to break this down. Welcome to the show.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here. I'm excited to dive into it all with you.
Amazing. So before we get started, I just want to give you your flowers. I want to call you out. I think you're one of the best at this like really approachable style. Like a lot of people talk about when you're a creator, the goal is to create this like one-on-one relationship with the viewer, the watcher as soon as possible. And I think you do it better than almost anyone I've seen. And we'll talk about like how you cultivated that, but I just wanted to start off with that. Like you're absolutely crushing it.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate that. It's, you know, being a creator, there is a lot of times where it's a very lonely journey. So and you don't get a ton of feedback other than, you know, numbers related, right? And so hearing that means a lot.
For sure. All right, so we'll get into the blueprint stuff and break down everything. But before we do that, so I was doing research and your path is really unique. So you were in modeling and fashion and then switched into software development even before like you started the content journey. So just talk about that a little bit. How did you go through that transition and kind of what prompted the switch? Because that's a pretty big career shift.
It was. And if you, it was very unexpected. It wasn't planned, which I think sometimes is the best path that happens is the one that's not planned. So when I was, after I graduated from high school, I went into fashion, went into modeling. I was living over in Hong Kong and just traveling throughout Asia in particular and having such a great experience. But I felt something was missing. So after, you know, just over a year of that, I decided to come back to Canada where I'm from and end up in Toronto, where I'm not from, but wanted to still be in a bigger center. So during university, I was studying graphic communications management, and I always thought I'd still apply it to the fashion industry, because that's what I knew. And it was in my fourth year of university, it was required to take a coding course. I mean, if you want to even call it coding, it was, you know, HTML, CSS. I think there might have been some JavaScript in there. But it was my first real taste of feeling like I had this, I know it sounds kind of cheesy, but almost like this superpower where I was like, wow, I have, you know, I've always been an entrepreneurial individual in various capacities, but I've never felt like I had the skills that if I wanted to start up a business or build something, I could actually do that. Like you want to build an app, you can build an app or a website at the time. That was really exciting to me. So from there, I ended up going down this path of really diving deep into coding and teaching myself as much as I could. I mean, at the time I was just graduating university and it wasn't an option to go back to school for another 4 years for computer science, like financially, or even to go back to school for, yeah, another 4 years. So then from there, I ended up going to a post-grad school and the rest was kind of history. Started, you know, working as a software developer at startups, at big tech companies and everything in between.
Yeah, it's wild. It's an awesome, like really unique. I talk about like one of one all the time, like trying to position yourself as like one of one. To me, that's as one of one as it gets. Like that's a really awesome background. And now the question though is, so you were basically, you switched careers, you went into the tech mode, you're working at startups, you're coding, but when did the light bulb go on for the content stuff? So I was scrolling your YouTube, like 5 years ago is when you posted your first video. Yeah. If you scroll mine, it's the same. It's like, it's hard to watch them for my own, I could say, but I think yours is still really good. But 5 years ago is when you started. So I assume you were working in like software development, coding startups before then. So what was the strategy or like light bulb moment where you were like, I got to start making content? Because that's 5 years ago is before a lot of the like short, I mean, that's way before the short form video stuff, but even before COVID. So what was your thinking?
Oh my goodness. So when I started, it was on YouTube. I was always drawn to YouTube. And I think that was because that's where, when I was even learning to code, you know, years before that, I'd always go to YouTube and search up different coding tutorials. The one thing though, when I was going through all those tutorials that I always felt in the back of my mind was, it was always, you know, it felt like there was never a woman teaching coding or anything, anyone that I could really relate to. So when I started my YouTube channel, it wasn't with the strategy of, hey, I want to be a creator or grow this channel. It was more so, you know, as I'm learning different technologies and growing in my career, I'm just going to put them online for coding tutorials and maybe it will help someone else. So it started very organically that the intention wasn't to grow into a creator. It was more so, you know, it felt like when you're younger, you have a little bit more time on your hands and I could record, you know, some coding tutorials and that was it. So it was very just kind of like, let's throw things up on the internet.
And then how long were you in that phase, which we'll say like hobbyist creator? At some point though, some light switched in your mind, either like I need to blow this up and do multiple channels, or like I can connect what I'm doing here in the community I'm building with something else. Like, just talk through that journey a little bit, because I think framing how long it takes is really helpful for people that are in the early stages, that maybe they come in intentionally with an idea, but they haven't hit any significant traction. So just like paint the picture of the timeline for people.
So my timeline isn't one that I would necessarily recommend, and I'll tell you why. But so my timeline from, you know, hobbyist to turning it really into a business would be, I would say it was about 1.5 to 2 years into doing content. And at that point I was already posting on Instagram. TikTok wasn't, you know, I wasn't doing TikTok at the time. It was obviously before COVID. So I'm sure it was around, but it wasn't as popular as it is now. And even with Instagram, oh, it was so embarrassing, but you know, embarrassing, but I'm still very happy I put myself out there. But you know, cause there was no short form video. So it'd be, and I'm talking about coding. So it'd literally be like me sitting next to my computer and like pointing to code on an image or something like that. Just finding different ways. And the reason I ended up going to Instagram as well was I started seeing that this was reaching people and impacting people on YouTube. So I thought, okay, let's go over to Instagram as well. I was an Instagram, you know, user at the time. I was like, this is really cool. So I just started, it was really scary at first, you know, cause it was a personal account I had, and starting to post about tech things that my family and friends wouldn't be interested in probably, and start unfollowing me or just being like, what is she doing? It was really scary in that aspect. And when it came to that light switch moment where I was like, this is a business, as I mentioned, it was about 1.5 to 2 years in. And how it happened was, I'm terrible at emails, even though I'm on the computer all the time, you know, love to do technical stuff, terrible at emails. And my partner came home and he is friends with a content creator. And the content creator was, I think, you know, double in size at the time, had been doing it for many years, like was way ahead. And he was sharing with my partner about what he was making with some brand deals. And was like, oh, Tiff is obviously doing this too, though, right? Like collaborating with brand deals. And my partner was like, we had no idea you could even make this kind of money doing that. So he comes home. I remember it to a T. He came home and he's like, do you have an email for Tiff and Tech? And I'm like, yeah, but I don't check it that often. He's like, go on it now and see. Because it was listed in my YouTube, I think, like kind of hidden, but still there. And there was, at the time, it felt like a lot of emails from different companies, you know. And we're like, whoa, this is really interesting. So that was kind of like that light switch moment, as far as the, you know, business financial side of things goes. But even more importantly, I would say that light switch moment when I realized it was having an impact on people, that was when I started to take it seriously, realizing that, hey, this is helping someone. That's really cool.
That is. And I think one thing I talk about, it feels like there's levels to the, like the creator monetization game, right? So at the beginning, so like in the first couple of years, you had YouTube, which you were posting videos a lot, and you had, let's say, like Instagram, I guess like pre-short form videos, like Instagram static, like photo posts. So there, like to me, the package monetization level is, you know, AdSense, and like you can start doing brand deals for like placements in YouTube. But as you go up the levels, all of a sudden you can start like building your own products, which, because you have a technical background, like you could literally build your own software products, put them into videos, sell through. Like, did you start thinking about other things you could do beyond the like AdSense brand deal stuff? Like, when did that start happening? Because like to go back to the blueprint concept, I think just mapping, even for me, I've only been doing this 18 months, just like mapping the trajectory of each stage and what order it makes sense to tackle them in, I think is really helpful for people who haven't thought through it.
Yeah, it was. So I did. I always knew that, you know, to your point, brand deals, there's brand deals and then there's AdSense. AdSense it can vary greatly. Well, not great, but it can vary a bit. And it's really, you know, I don't ever want to take for granted AdSense, but it's not paying the bills per se, right? And then there's brand deals, which have been great. And you know, working with long-term, forming those more so long-term brand deal partnerships is always amazing. I remember it was, you know, it was only, I would say this year, no, sorry, last year, we signed our first kind of year-long brand deal. And that was like a cool win, you know, like, wow, usually it's kind of one-offs or maybe a few months for different things. But to form those relationships where it's steady income is hard in a creator world. So it feels like a good win when it happens. But then to your point, for my, even honestly, my mental health or my well-being, I was like, I can't rely solely on social media for income. It might be great, but there needs to be something else that we build long-term. So when I'm 50 years old, I can just be sitting on a beach, hopefully, probably not, but you know, like doing something else that I don't have to feel this sometimes pressure that comes with social media. So for me, what that ended up being is a business that we launched only a few months ago, which is called Takeoff. But to work back, you know, that process of when I knew it was the right time, I don't know if there was a right time. I still feel like maybe it was a bit too early that I launched it. Maybe I should have, you know, I think it's more so finding that if it exists, which it probably doesn't, but that's sweet spot when you have a bit more time to put attention to it. And you're already kind of in the flow with your content creation and other things. Yeah, it's hard though, because, you know, it's one thing to get instant gratification on social media and see the views and the followers and all that other stuff. But then to be building a separate business, it's such a 180 as far as the gratification goes. Even if you think you're not impacted by, you know, the social numbers or whatnot, then you go into a total different business where you're like, wow, this is a grind. You know, it's so different. So I would say is wait until you're in a good headspace with, you know, everything social, and that's kind of in a working engine. And what really helped me as well, or this was one reason why I launched Takeoff when I did, was when Tiff and Tech could fully fund it, and it could fully fund it for a long time. So then it's not, you know, coming out of my personal finances or impacting my day to day. It's just one business to another. That was a huge moment for me.
Yeah. And so there's so many like threads I want to pull on there. I think a really good frame that you just said was basically the goal, the dream state is that you have some recurring, ideally recurring subscription revenue, but even if not, like you have some business that is your like almost like main attention focus, and you use the social media as firepower to scale it. And the brand deals and AdSense are just like icing on the cake. Like those are just like, okay, let's take a trip to Hawaii, or like that's, you're not relying on that. But the interesting thing is like, as you grow, the brand deals and AdSense will just go up even though you're not relying on it. So like, yeah, that is, I feel like the dream that people are getting to. I want to talk about Takeoff because I want to just break down like your whole process with it. But one thing before that, so you mentioned the year-long brand deal. So I think a lot of creators, when they get into, everybody looking from the outside is like, oh, brand deals, that's sick. Like if I got free products and like I could make videos that I'd already make, it's a dream. And then you start getting into it and you're like, ah, like the brand deals that you're getting are sometimes not exactly related to the content you want to make and the deadlines and the review cycles. It's like kind of annoying for your schedule, whatever. There's some drawbacks, but most of those are one-offs. You do all that relationship building and work for like a one-time payoff, which is nice, but then it's usually done, versus the dream, what you said is the year-long brand deal. So talk about like, what is the structure there? Are they paying you on a monthly basis and you are obligated to make a certain amount of videos? Is it more like an ambassadorship? Like how did you structure that?
So no ambassadorship, it's full payment. And how we structured it was, I've worked with them for a few years leading up to this, and you know, it was just ongoing. And then they came to me with this proposal for a year long and what it would look like. And one of the things that we wanted to negotiate right up front was that I didn't want it to be a monthly payment or even spread out evenly, for the reason of, you know, when we are committing to working with this brand, it potentially, even if it's not necessarily in the contract, you know, it's negotiated, that's not, but just you as a creator, you don't want to be promoting, you know, two similar brands back to back that are competing it feels icky, right? So we identified with them. We said, you know, this is interesting to us, but we need quite a bit of the payment up front. And then, you know, the next quarter, this much, but the majority of it needs to be upfront or as much as possible in the first half of the year. Because if something was to happen where halfway through the year, you know, the partnership fell through or something like that, in the meantime, we might have to be saying no to other potential companies. So trying to, you know, find that sweet spot as to ensuring that we're covered as, you know, the creator, but then also something that makes sense for them. Because, you know, at the end of the day, even if it's a large company, it's easy for people to be like, oh, they have endless budget, you know, they can whatever. But it's still, you know, them reporting to their boss and they still have a budget per quarter and different things like that. So just trying to meet in the middle. And then the biggest thing is as well is, you know, going over everything, you know, in the contract over and over again, sometimes even bringing in a friend who's a lawyer, just taking the contracts as seriously as possible and protecting yourself as much. Because what you mentioned as well is, especially I think with longer term partnerships, there can be this sense that the brand kind of feels this wasn't my or isn't my experience with this brand, but the worry can be that the brand feels entitled that they can just call you up or just start like, oh, well, she's with us for a year, right?
For us now.
Yeah. So just really outlining expectations very clearly has made it successful so far.
Yeah, because I've talked about this idea called creator in residence. So I just like gave it a name, but it was this idea of the dream for creators is really like golf or F1 or like NASCAR, where as a creator, you have like 5 to 10 brands that align both professional category wise, but like also personally, like the vibe is just a fit. And those brands pay you on an annual basis, like you said, either quarterly, monthly, upfront, whatever the structure is. But like you are, for example, like let's say Lululemon. So like you are a Lululemon creator, which means they send you free product, they pay you whatever the rate that makes sense for your size. And then throughout the year, there's like an understanding that you'll like put it in organically into your lifestyle stuff. And then maybe you'll make, I don't know, whatever you negotiate, 3 to 6 videos a year, whatever it is. But as a creator, it would be so much more liberating to have 5 of those, which covers your like brand deal income. And then the rest of the time when you're not making those, like you're always looking proactively, your incentives are aligned. So you're always looking proactively to include them. But when you're not, you don't have to take on those one-off brand deals where you're stretching. To me, that's like a dream scenario. And I think that exists on the highest of levels. Like the biggest creators have that. But as you go down, that model hasn't trickled down. And I wonder what you're like, I would love to get your take on if that's something that you would prefer versus kind of this like one-off structure. And also is the why do you think it hasn't trickled down?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, definitely it's something that I would prefer, to your point, you know, just having those, not only would I prefer it, but I find that that's where the most success is when you have those longer term partnerships. You know, that was the example I gave is the only year long one that I've had, but I've worked with many companies on a, you know, ongoing basis, you know, going to their conferences, promoting, like covering different things like that. And I found through the data that that is the content that even though it's sponsored, you know, people get, I'll give you an example. So I work a lot with a company called SAP, B2B company, massive company, but yet very little people have actually heard about it because it's B2B, I guess. And they're fantastic. And I've gone to quite a few of their conferences, done a bunch of different kind of content with them. And even though you might think that a company like SAP maybe isn't the most exciting, if you don't know what they do, I was kind of nervous at first. I'm like, oh, how is the audience? It's tech focused, but is it going to resonate with them? Is it going to hit home? But because it's been such a long-term partnership that we've worked together ongoing, that sometimes performs better than my organic content even, because they're so excited about it. And it's been a story for so long that they can really follow it now. So I think it's both a win-win to the creator, but then also to the business when they are investing in these long-term partnerships. I don't know why it hasn't happened yet, why that hasn't become the norm. Maybe it's something to do, I'm wondering, with their budgets on a quarterly basis, or, you know, it still feels like they're taking a risk, by committing to a creator that long. But the data is there that I've seen anyways, that that is the most successful partnerships.
So that's a really interesting frame too, is like when you do the work with SAP, if you've been doing it long enough, their customers and their fans start to know your face and like your personality. And when you're getting injected into a launch, then 6 months later you come back, there's like a nice connection there between versus like a one-off, they've never seen you before, and then they have to go educate themselves. So that's something I hadn't thought about, but is like makes a ton of sense. Talk about, so that take that SAP deal, for example, because I think it's easy to understand like how a B2C brand deal works. Like, let's say it's a clothing company. They send you clothes, or like you wear the clothes, you talk about, you know, let's say it's a B2C company, but it's software. Like, even that makes sense, because you're like, okay, I use the software. But a B2B deal like that, talk about like what you do for them. So like, you'll go to the conferences. Is it just like an appearance, or are you like are you a panelist? You know, when you make videos, what does that mean? Are you just making it for them to run ads in like a B2B sense? Like, talk about that at a level of detail lower.
Yeah, it's so interesting. When I first started, so since SAP, we've done quite a few B2B, and it's a really, just as like a little tip to any, you know, creators that are kind of finding their space, B2B is something that I think is, I found so far, like even in the past year, really uncovered is something that not a lot of creators are doing. And there's a lot of demand for it from a lot of these B2B big companies. And they have the budget, which is great too. But it was really interesting at first, because I was like, what is the goal here, right? You know, it's not where it's doing necessarily B2C, where it's like, okay, we got this many click-throughs and this many people purchased it, you know, within the first 7 days, the product, different things like that. So it varies based on what company in particular, but a lot of times it's, you know, a mix of awareness. Sometimes there is negotiations there is for them to run ads against as well, but that hasn't always been the case. A lot of times it's more so literally for awareness, to get their name out there more, or sometimes it's because they're looking to hire talent. So they're like, hey, I know you have a very specific tech focused audience. You know, the goal here is to spread more awareness about the company, and in turn, you know, drive them back to more to job applications or different things like that. So the deliverables can vary from at conferences. It might be, yeah, speaking on a panel, but then it also might just be covering the conference, and then in real time or after the fact. For how that content looks, it could be more so for covering a conference, it could be more so a vlog, right? Like, come see the world's first AI robot, maybe, I don't know, with me, you know, yeah. Different things like that. And then taking them through the conference that way. So it kind of varies. I know that's not a straightforward answer, but it really varies with what you're looking for.
And I think, so what you hit on is such gold. And what I'm trying to transition to also is like B2B, especially tech B2B, it's where the money is. They have super high margins, and there's a mismatch in supply and demand. Ton of demand, not a lot of supply, because most creators that are B2C focused either just don't fit industry-wise, or like they don't talk about the right things that would relate B2B-wise. So I guess the next logical question would be, if someone's listening to this and they feel like their industry is like industry adjacent to being good for B2B content, how are you getting those deals? Do you have a manager? Are you proactively trying to be like, these are the 10 companies that, you know, at my startup, these are the tools that we paid for, so you reach out proactively, these are coming in? Like, talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so this is really interesting. So all of the brand deals that I do are incoming. We don't do any outbound. We did for a while to try and test it out and see how it worked, but right now we're at a point where I'm really grateful. We're busy. I don't want to be any more busy with different partnerships. So it's good where it's at. So they're all incoming, just from, you know, obviously from my email being on my different socials, but obviously it's more than that too. It's word of mouth, different things like that. So I'll give you an example of how I've seen recently it work really well through different conversations. So I did a partnership about a month or two months ago with NVIDIA, and you know, they were really happy with it. It did really well. What I did though is I posted it actually on LinkedIn, just as more of like a, because I had more of a business-centric audience there. It's smaller, but I was just like, oh, I'll just throw it up and just to kind of let people know that I'm partnering with them, because it's a really proud partnership moment. From that, all of a sudden, I started getting hit up by other companies on their level. And when I was meeting with them, they were like, oh, we love the partnership you did with NVIDIA. And I'm like, that's how it hit. They saw
it. That's how it
happens. Yeah, it's like they saw, it's like anything, you know, you see, it's just how we are as humans. We see our competitors.
Social credibility.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, well, yeah, we need to do that. So I think one thing, I'm sharing that because I think one thing is, you know, it kind of feels embarrassing at first or weird, or at least for me, it did anyways, but being, you know, vocal of those moments, like being proud of those moments and sharing them on other formats like LinkedIn, or I'm not saying share your content around for free, of course, but you know, if you have, you know, LinkedIn's worked really well for me because of that business audience and that's where a lot of them spend time, but just really, you know, acknowledging those wins and kind of shouting a little bit about it, I think is okay. Because it's kind of a trickle effect. As far as how I structure my manager and all that goes, so I did go with an agency for a little bit. And it was good. And I was my expectations going into that, it was one of the biggest agencies in North America. So I was really excited. And I learned a lot from working with them. I had hoped or thought that it would not just be so much of what's coming to my email, you know, because it would go to my email and then I'd forward it to them. I also had hoped that there'd be a lot of incoming from their side. I didn't find that was the case. And I also found that no one at the time and still today, right now anyways, was willing to build those relationships as much as myself and my partner, who actually does all the managing for me. You know, it's one thing, you know, I'd be CC'd on these emails from this agency and it would just be like one or two sentences, like, here's a number, da da da, like very transactional, which is fine.
Yeah, very transactional.
But, right? I knew I was looking for a way to build longer term relationships with these individuals. They might not be at the company that we're, you know, negotiating today, but they're going to go to another company. And I wanted to, you know, build those relationships. So what happened was, after I left that agency, my husband now, he's, you know, a full-time entrepreneur, has worked in sales, everything under the sun, has many different successful businesses. And he was like, why don't you give me a shot at this? And I'm like, there's no way I'm going to work with you. It sounds terrible, right? But it works amazing. So, you know, to paint a picture of our day, when we wake up, we sit at our dining room table where I'm sitting right now. And from about 7 a.m. till 8:30, we each have our laptops and he does all the typing and the negotiating. Hey, do you like this? How does this sound? And it works amazing. Like it just flows for us. But that's not to steer anyone away from going for an agency. I would just be, if you do go with an agency, just be ensure that you're CC'd on all the emails. How are they treating the clients? How are they speaking to them? Because, you know, they're representing you.
Yeah. I want to transition to Takeoff though, because so as we set that up, you had the AdSense, you had the brand deals when you started, obviously it was much smaller. You scaled that, you're growing that. That's kind of like the Tiffin Tech, let's say like a cash engine at the beginning. Then you ultimately decided, okay, we're going to build a product. So talk about Takeoff. How did you come up with the product you wanted to build? And then what is that?
Takeoff's like my you know, as it has to be when it's your product, it's like my baby. It's just everything to me. So Takeoff started I knew, as we mentioned earlier, you know, we chatted about earlier, like yourself, I knew from an early stage, I wanted to take this audience and community and do something else with it, right? I just didn't know what it would be like. And I didn't want to rush that process because building a product is extraordinarily challenging. 90%, I don't know what the actual statistics are, but it feels like, you know, 99% of them fail or don't get to where they want to be. So it's very challenging and time consuming and financially consuming as well. So Takeoff, where it started from was a place of, I found my most successful videos, especially on YouTube, were more so tutorial focused. So it'd be like a Python tutorial or different things like that. So when I first started thinking about Takeoff, I thought, OK, okay, I want to do like a coding course or a coding kind of community, like very coding specific. But as I grew, my skill sets and in my audience even grew as well. I thought, I don't want it just to be coding. That can be one aspect, but how can we make this bigger and broader, but still niche? From there, where we landed, where it is today, is two paths. So one is, you can kind of think of it like the, are you familiar with Masterclass?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So, you know, the goal aim is the quality of Masterclass type videos. So, you know, we hire a production studio for this. We, you know, hire and bring in some really incredible speakers. The catch though, what makes it so different is it's with real world individuals, if you will, meaning people who aren't celebrity level individuals, but maybe, for example, they're vice president of, you know, Google or different things like that, right? That people, when they go to takeoff, they can watch these videos and be like, oh, this is how they got to where they are today. Like really understanding that and breaking down their stories and challenges they had along the way. So that's one aspect of takeoff. So every 2 weeks we launch a new speaker. Then on the other side, what we're launching actually tomorrow is workshops. And workshops are hands-on. So the first one we're launching is, you know, around AWS. So if someone wants to learn more so about Amazon Web Services, it's hands-on kind of thing. Now, it won't always be technical. Some might be more so workshops on public speaking, different things like that. So those are the two kind of async areas with takeoff. And then the third that we recently launched, which is so funny because it's the area that is most, for me anyways, it's very low cost, is we do weekly live Q&As. So if you're a takeoff member, you can have, for example, a recent one we did was with a tech recruiter at Microsoft. You know, it's just on Zoom for takeoff members at the moment. And the response from those type of interactions and when I start promoting those type of things are what we see makes people feel the happiest or most fulfilled. And it's so funny because it's just on Zoom. It's not, you know, this high quality production studio, but it made me, or it reminded me that, you know, the goal with takeoff and what a lot of people want is just that immediate connection with others where they can ask about their career paths or their advice. So that's a long-winded way of saying what takeoff is, but the premise yeah. around it is this community that you can subscribe to on a monthly basis and get access to all of these different individuals that you wouldn't have access to probably otherwise.
Yeah, it's funny about the live Q&A. Like it's always the thing you least expect is what people want the most, which is so funny. How are you? So talk me through, like, you have an unfair content advantage on all platforms. You have a huge embedded audience, but then also you have like the skill to be able to make any content to promote anything you want. How are you using that content or like that unfair advantage to make takeoff win bigger? Is it like, you know, like a few things off the top of my head, but I'm sure I'm missing a bunch, is like, so obviously you could make dedicated content for it, right? Like you could post to your audience, say, hey, here's takeoff. Here's an example of what we're doing. Subscribe. Like that's probably the easiest one. You could do that forever. But then there's probably other things you could do up the ladder that are more like, you know, like genius marketing tactics. Like talk me through how you're thinking about the strategy on the distribution.
Yeah. So it's super interesting. So to set up kind of the context for this, we actually did, which is launching tomorrow too, an entire rebrand of takeoff, like the user experience on takeoff, which is launching tomorrow. So I would say the past month I've gone pretty quiet with promoting it, knowing that such a big change is coming. But regardless, for distribution, I saw a long time ago this creator who's in fashion, and it was to promote her ebook at the time. It was on YouTube. And how she did it, she treated it almost as though it was a brand deal. So tried to find the most organic way to, you know, input it into her YouTube video. And I thought that was brilliant. Like, it was very organic. Yeah, you know, it's kind of placed there maybe a little bit, but it still makes sense and flows. It doesn't feel out of place, or it's a full video on what she wants to push people to. So for YouTube, I'll oftentimes do that with Takeoff, where it's, you know, a lot of times for videos, it might be the top 10 skills for the future, different things like that. And while listing, you know, other resources, include Takeoff organically as well, because I truly believe that resource deserves to stand up there with the other ones I'm saying as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, I haven't made any dedicated content to Takeoff. Will I in the future? Maybe I'll make one or two things on it, but never something like a full YouTube video. You know, even if I did an Instagram reel on it, I don't think it would do great being a full video. I don't know why though.
I think there is something about like when someone perceives that you're pushing your own thing, they like disengage.
Yeah.
But the question, like, so how are you, what's the main source for new customers for Takeoff? Like, I'm assuming you're not operating Takeoff. You're not doing everything right for it, but are you doing the interviews with the guests, like the highly produced ones, the Q&As? So like, how involved are you and how are you getting customers?
So I'm very involved and it's been challenging, you know, being as
three
involved.
Jobs.
it's been impossible. But, you know, that's, you know, coming to a different state soon. But so, yeah, very involved. I'm on shoot the day of production. I meet with them many times prior to it. You know, it's coming out of the Tiffin Tech budget. So my budget right to that. So every step along the way, I'm involved right now. Obviously, the goal is to step back a little bit and have other experts come on who are better at doing things than I am to help grow the business as well. Right now with customers, it was, so I'll kind of give you a timeline. So we soft launched in November. And in November, you know, I remember the first day, I'm like, oh my gosh, just please one person sign up, just one person, yeah. Like one person pay for this. And we had a decent amount of individuals sign up. But I knew all of their names because it was people who have been following Tiffin Tech for a long time that I've engaged with in the DMs. Like it was super loyal.
Cult fans.
Yeah. Yeah. But so on one hand, it's easy to say, oh yeah, they just signed up because we have followers. But behind the scenes, it was building those relationships, spending time like with those individuals. Some of them, I don't do this anymore, but when I first started out, I would get on Zoom calls with people for 15 minutes just to talk to them. And it was those type of individuals who signed up to Takeoff. And I was like, wow, okay, this is like, that feels like it was a payoff moment. Not like it's always about transactional, but that felt good. From there, how I've gotten customers thus far is, I would say a mix between actually, once again, LinkedIn, which is really strange because it's, I think I have like 11,000 on LinkedIn. Like it's a small audience, but it's very specific to what we're doing on Takeoff, I think. So that's why. And yeah. On LinkedIn, I'll do like a post where it's just directly promoting Takeoff. And then on Instagram, I haven't done anything on Instagram for Takeoff for a while, but we still have new members coming in on a pretty frequent basis. And I believe it's just, you know, it's in my bio. It says founder of Takeoff. They go to the channel and then they just start exploring it. So it's been really organic thus far. That being said, though, once we do launch our new site and everything's up and running, I kind of want to explore. I'm kind of toying around with exploring maybe, you know, first of all, doing way more organic content on Takeoff for Takeoff, but then also to maybe exploring doing paid ads, especially on like LinkedIn, because it's worked well so far organically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think paid ads work super well. Like if you made a, The key is figuring out a way to make a vertical video that isn't pushing it like that isn't obviously pushing it. Like if you can find some subtle way, like I really like what you said about the YouTube where you're like, these are the 10, you know, the 10 best resources for tech, or like for short form, these are the 3 best resources for tech. Number 1 and 2 are whatever. And then number 3 is Takeoff. And you're like, by the way, I run Takeoff. Here's what it is. Like if it was that subtle, I think you just run paid ads and like that would work super well. So the other thing I wanted to say is, so the strategy, it's genius. The Takeoff thing is genius because really what you want to do as a creator is build a flywheel where one thing feeds the other. And so in theory, what you've done is Takeoff is a professionally produced platform to get these high tech execs to participate. But then those tech execs, those same tech companies will want to do brand deals and pay you to go to conferences. And you'll build that relationship. And maybe it's not that individual that's sponsoring you in, but that individual is going to introduce you to someone else. And then all of a sudden you're at the Google conference covering it. And that came from you having the Google head of tech. So that's just going to spin, that wheel would just spin forever. So that's genius.
Yeah. It's been honestly so good for exactly what you just said. And to take it kind of even one step further, thinking of the vision, you know, hopefully you can start working on this in the summertime and whatnot with Takeoff, is thinking about using this technology that we have and that we've built. And because it's essentially at its core, a course platform, I mean, it's community driven and whatnot, but using that and basically duplicating it, we've had interest from really large tech companies, you know, duplicating it, but then it's just duplicating the tech story, but then it's with their tech company's content. So it's tech company brought to you by Takeoff, and it's internally used by their employees. So there's been a few companies interested in something like that I'm really excited to explore too. Because B2C is one thing, B2C is hard. You know, I'm with Takeoff, for example, it's getting people to sign up to something, even if it's, you know, $20 a month or whatnot, and the value is there. Like, I don't know anywhere else, and I'm not saying this because I'm biased, even though it sounds like it, but the amount of, you know, courses and things we provide on Takeoff for $20 a month, I don't know anywhere else that I personally could go and get all of that. I mean, I guess Masterclass, but I think you have to pay for a full year for that, and that's their next level. But so I guess what I'm getting at is, but it's still hard to get people to sign up. Like, we've had good success, but it's not, you know, like 10,000 members or anything like that. And I just keep on getting drawn back to the B2B model as well. So seeing if there's a way we can take it in a different capacity, B2B.
Yeah, like white label the platform itself. It makes a lot of sense. Like, I think I like the Masterclass for Business. I like that little tagline. That's a really clear way of saying, like, yo, Masterclass crushed the lots of cool course content across many disciplines that an average person would want. Well, there needs to be something with all this different business content that a business person would want to either upskill or just like figure out career paths. That makes a lot of sense. And I think the theme of this episode really is, there's like, the riches are in the B2B. And if you have clear alignment with the type of content you make, I mean, I don't think there's anybody that I follow better than you in terms of the alignment for B2B. Like, it's so prime for B2B to work with you, partner with you, collaborate, like pay you for placement appearances. Like, it just makes a lot of sense. So yeah, I mean, that's awesome. I was going to say, when you think about like your time moving forward, do you want your day-to-day to shift to where it's like exclusively the Tiff and Tech brand content and everything else operates itself? Or like, where is your interest?
Where I would like it to shift, or where, you know, better than where I would like, where it needs to shift, is more so towards Takeoff, I think. Continuing with the Tiff and Tech arm, that's kind of operating, it's in a really good spot where it is right now, with operations and whatnot. So then more so focusing on Takeoff to get that in a place where hopefully over the next few months or whatnot, we can bring on other individuals who are experts, you know, that can help us build Takeoff to the next level, so that I can go back to Tiff and Tech. So my interest lies in simply why I started Tiff and Tech to begin with, which is literally just creating cool shit, right? Like, creating fun things that will resonate with people, that will enable them to feel like they can build other cool stuff too. That's where I would like most of my time to be, but where it needs to be right now is not necessarily there.
What does your operation look like for the content side? Because I think I've seen you mention somewhere that you have some kind of a team in place that allows you to, because you have like three jobs right now. So like, you, I'm sure you have certain people that help you expedite the process to get the content out. Talk about that. And like, as you were assembling that team, what has been the most critical role for giving you leverage?
Yeah, that's a great question. So everyone is so... What I think everyone is so, I've just
everyone's thought, equally valuable.
Yeah, it's honestly. So I have someone, a YouTube manager, and his role really started out as, you know, he was living in Romania with his family, and his role was really to like help me at the time pick topics to do. And it's evolved more so into holding me accountable, because YouTube is one of those things that we found success thus far in consistency, finding that happy medium between consistency and quality. So he really keeps me accountable. Like, and that is worth so much in itself, by being like, Tiff, like, you know, what are you posting next week? Have you filmed it? Where is it at? Like really managing me for my time with that.
Yeah.
We've been working with him for so long, actually, that really cool story. We, through Tiff and Tech, the company, we brought him and his family over to Canada. So now they're, they're just applying for their permanent residence. Like they're, you know, their kids will now grow up in Canada. It's really cool. So we're like very, very close with him and his family now. So that's been critical. I wouldn't necessarily, for creators listening to this, I wouldn't necessarily say that that is a must have, or maybe it didn't make sense to be our first hire even. But at the time I was really struggling. Like when I knew I wanted to grow YouTube, it was really struggling. And I just didn't know how to grow it. So I thought someone like him might be able to help me. And I think more than anything, though, his help has come from accountability, just holding me accountable to my schedule and what I say I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And also
one hyper quick follow up on that. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No.
So when you were trying to grow on YouTube and he, you said he was looking up the topics and stuff, was your strategy for making videos on the spectrum of like, this is what I feel like I want to make and I'm inspired to make, and then on the other end is like, these are the tags and trending topics that are going super hot in this vertical, and like, I don't even care if I know that much about it right now, I'm going to pick one of those, research it, and make a video. Like, where on that spectrum were you, and where did you see the most success? Because that's what I'm in that mode right now with YouTube, trying to figure out like, do I just live by the data or intuition? So I'm curious to hear what you say there.
It's been both. It's been trial and error of both. Where we, for a long time now, where we are is, and where we found the most success is, I will literally just like what I'm interested in, you know, and what I've heard from, you know, reading all the comments and different, you get like a sense of what people are looking for, right? So I'll make notes and then I'll take a shot at writing different topics that I want to speak about based on just what I've heard from the audience, not what's trending. I don't spend a lot of time on, like, I don't watch YouTube videos really, other unless I'm doing research, but not just for enjoyment. So then I'll send him the titles and then he'll be like, you know what, we did something really similar a few weeks ago, or why don't you maybe alter it to this? He lives on YouTube. So he's like, why don't you alter it to this? I've seen a lot of things talking about this trending, so maybe we could kind of alter it a little bit. But I would say the only way that, for me anyways, I could and can continue doing something like YouTube is by staying true to what you're interested in. And, you know, because otherwise it's going to feel so forced. It's going to come across so forced and you're going to burn out so quickly.
Yeah. Okay. So that's super helpful advice. Cause I'm in that mode of like, all right, I'm interested in these things, but I'm trying to like niche down into this vertical. Like, where is the overlap? If there is an overlap, you know, like the one video I've made that's gone crazy was like a random tutorial on like building a chatbot in Poe, like the AI platform, which I just saw one day and like knew nothing about and just like made it. And that's the one video that went. So this is very, very topical. Okay, so you have him. So he's the YouTube manager, very helpful for both the data analysis and also the accountability.
Yes.
All right, who else do you have?
So then I don't know how this, I got so lucky with this, but my editor lives in Europe and he actually went to school and studied computer science, which is like a match made in heaven. Cause you know,
perfect. We're
doing, right? So when we do like technical videos, sometimes he'll add in like different things that I didn't even ask him to do. And I'm like, this is amazing, like brilliant. And he is honestly phenomenal in the sense that there are times, as I do have a lot going on, there are times where I might only film a YouTube video, say 2 days out from when we need to post it. And he will turn it around so quickly and is just like amazing to work with. And I've gone through so many different editors, many who were great, many who were not great. That is really challenging. And I found him on Upwork. It's just like one of those things where you just keep on trying different editors.
Yeah.
And then
it just fits.
Yeah. And then now we're off of Upwork. You know, we communicate via, Telegram. And, you know, because obviously Upwork takes a percentage of the payments and whatnot for him. So we're like, let's just take it off and then negotiate a new kind of deal. But the trust that had to go into that is incredible. I've never met this person in real life. And he's literally being like, okay, yeah, you know, pay me once a month. Let's go. And I would never, but I could just disappear. Do you know what I mean? Like, so that's, yeah. It's really cool to have those relationships. So I have him, a graphic designer who does like all the thumbnails and different things like that. And then any other kind of editors or if I need animations are just more so outsourced from, Fiverr or Upwork kind of thing.
Yeah. So you'd say like your YouTube is not fully automated. Obviously you have to like write the topics and film the videos, but the majority of like the pieces, the lift isn't on you to keep YouTube going. Would you say the same for short form or you're doing all the short form?
I'm doing all the short form. I would like to get to a place where I'm not editing the short form, all of it, like the ones that are more so storytelling and in depth. I just need to like totally on. I just need to sit down and try and find some editors that make sense to do that.
Yeah, it's tough with short form. It's very tough because I feel like the style and the pacing and the timing matters so much more, you know? Yeah. A few more questions for you and then I'll get you out of here. The first one, so your content's obviously worked well on every platform. What are some things that you feel like are obvious to you about content that when you look around at other creators or you like consume other content, you feel like was a cheat code for you that people are missing? Like what comes to mind?
I think for me, it's so funny. So, you know, taking a step back here, and this actually relates to you. When Reels first started, when TikTok and Reels first started blowing, TikTok and then Reels first started blowing up, it was really quick short form videos, right? Like if you can get it under like 10 seconds, the better, right? Like as quick as possible. And that was working well on TikTok and Reels. So that's what we were leaning into. And it still felt kind of weird at the time as a tech creator. I'm like, what am I going to do for 10 seconds? Like it's kind of strange feeling. But yeah. You know, you just like anything, you just, the worst thing you can do is not create for long periods of time. Like, you know, when you have that motivation and you want to, even if you think it's going to be, when I'm like, I don't know if this is going to work or not, but let's try. Like, you know, just like letting go of that ego and just trying, I think has been really successful for me. The other thing though is, so that was happening for quite a while where it was really short form content. Then I kind of started feeling like burning out on that in the sense I'm like, hey, there's no meat here. It's very like high level. Then creators like yourself started coming along who were doing more so of this storytelling, sitting down, talking into a mic, but keeping it still very short form. And I'm like, this is brilliant. This is so refreshing. So then after seeing, you know, yourself and a few other creators doing that, I'm like, let's try it. And that is the hardest content to create because it's so hard. Right? It's so hard to keep people engaged and tell that story in a way where it's like they can understand something in 40 to 50 or, you know, 60 seconds and see the value in it that you see knowing the bigger story behind it. So now what I do is I do a mix. What I love doing and what brands love is that more talking head storytelling video because there's so much meat there you can do. I still will do more of that really quick short form content because it kind of balances out for me still with my audience. It balances it out. My audience really loves the saves on a lot of those resource short, really, really short form videos still get like just like so many different saves, so many different shares. So I still do them because they still resonate with individuals, but I love doing more of the talking head kind of longer ones. I guess that's a long way of saying just continue iterating. And even if you find yourself wanting to switch things up, don't necessarily feel like you have to do a 180. Start integrating what you want to do more, like threading that more into your content. And then over time, your audience will start resonating with it and growing with that as well.
That's really good advice. I'm definitely in that phase of like, all right, I kind of became a one trick pony where a lot of different stories I'm telling, but it's like that same, you can like, if someone closes their eyes and listens to one of my videos, they can probably imagine me sitting in the chair, full screen, split screen. Like that's the type of video I make, but I'm trying to branch out. And like you said, my brain is like, oh, let's just kill that and go completely 180. But you should just like try, like dip your toe in the water in different ways. So I'm trying to figure that out. On the super short ones, which I've never done, but I'm very interested in doing because I think it's easy for them to loop a lot and people will share them. What's the format or series style that you've seen the most success? Is it like you said, with the tools, you'll say like, this is my favorite tool for this. And you say like one sentence about it and then it's done. Is it like that pretty much?
Yeah. It's anything that is kind of like a very quick, walkthrough. So for example, one I did, recently was like a screenshot to code. So it's literally, you can screenshot the UI of a browser and then it will generate the code that, is based on that image that you input into the AI. And just going through, you know, I think that was like 20 seconds long, going through the steps of how to do that. Because people are following along each step, so they're more likely to stay. And then also, too, because it's a tool, they'll save it or share it as well. So that kind of format has worked well.
What are some things that you want to try but haven't tried yet for, let's say, for short form specifically, that you've seen, you've been like, oh, I keep seeing this, like this looks like an emerging trend, I should probably get on this, but you haven't, you know, actioned on it yet?
Oh, that's a great question. I'm trying to find a way to, something I haven't actioned on yet, but I would really like to, is a creator that let me take a step back. A creator that I'm really inspired by as millions of people are, is Cleo Abram.
So yeah, she's awesome.
She's incredible. She's brilliant. Like her video, like it's just amazing. And one thing I really like about her videos is they very rarely, or if they do, it's not something I'm aware of. They very rarely will use, like, if ever, static B-roll images, right? Like they're not going on these sites where you can just get free B-roll or whatnot. They're doing so much animations and graphics, or they're actually going to where the event's taking place, they're talking about. So doing more of that documentary style video is something I'm super interested in. But keeping it somewhat in the vein of tech, just because that's kind of my niche. And I'm hoping to, you know, explore that starting in the summertime. The challenge is you don't know how it's going to work. And a lot of times, you know, being in Toronto, a lot of these things that I want to explore are located other places. So it's taking a bet on how is this going to do and flying there. And this is for a 60-second video. It's the whole thing.
It's a lot to bite off for a short. I think she has an amazing loop where I think a lot of her intentional research and custom animation happens for her long form YouTube. And then every one of those can be repackaged, but like not just cut a clip and go. She's like refilming the short as like a native video, but she can use the animation over. Like I should go back and review her shorts, but she does do a lot of shorts where she doesn't do a long form video with it. But I don't think the editing lift is as crazy as the ones that she does a YouTube video for. But yeah, like she'll go and fly to the nuclear power plant like 5 hours away. And I feel like you need more predictability than just like a 45 second video. Cause that is a lot to bite off.
It is. It's a lot to bite off. But that aside, what I very quickly uncovered is even those beautiful animations that, you know, you see in her videos, for example, they are extraordinary. They're not cheap for like, you know, 15 seconds. And then if you're making a whole YouTube video, you know, when I was looking at, okay, what if we hired like a animator, what would this look like?
It's really expensive.
Yeah. I wish I had that skill, but yeah.
Yeah. It also, no matter if you have the skill or not, it takes forever too. Like it's like 20 hours for a 20 second animation. It's wild. Last question I'll ask you. So a lot of your videos talk about obviously tech and coding and stuff. You also cover AI tools a lot. And so I'm curious, given that you're technical and can probably get more out of the AI tools where they're at, like in this stage, what are the best AI workflows or tools that you're actually using in your day-to-day life? Like, have you found any of these that are really moving the needle, or is it more just experimental? Because for me personally, I don't even really use anything beyond like Perplexity or ChatGPT for search on a daily basis. I don't use any other AI tools. I'm curious where you land.
I wish I had something to tell you, because I wish there was, even to what we were just speaking about, I've been searching for so long an AI tool that could take like, you know, that more static B-roll and turn it into really cool animations. Doesn't exist yet anyways, or that I found. But no, I'm in a very similar boat than you. You know, it's what I do for, I use AI. I use Claude a lot for specifically around thinking of titles for YouTube. So like, here are some titles that I'm thinking of, like, give me 10 more around this. And maybe I'll take a part, you know, from one example and a part from another. That's, I'll use Claude a lot to almost be like a friend to bounce ideas off of, and then hopefully get to a better place. Like, you know, I had an idea in my head, but I wasn't translating properly. So mainly for the ideation stage, but I would love to use them more in my day to day, but I just don't think they're there yet.
Yeah, not yet. I think like the Sora wave, once that happens, those will be really helpful for video production. But it's funny because like once they're easy enough to use where they're high enough leverage, the entire dichotomy of how everything works will just change because everyone in the world will be using them for that, right? So like to build your own tool, like basically how long will it take before all it took was a prompt and a couple of reference images for you to have built the takeoff platform with AI, or like to have AI built the majority of it? Like once that happens, there's going to be millions of platforms, you know? So it's funny. Mm-hmm. Like we're in that in between right now.
It's so interesting. And even, you know, what we just spoke about with really enjoy, like, you know, with the price of animations and, oh, I really enjoy this person's videos and whatnot. We're so close to getting to a stage where with AI tooling, or it feels close anyways, but you know, anyone will be able to make that quality of, not necessarily storytelling. I mean, I guess they could input someone's script and do it that way, but visuals we're so close to getting to, which I don't know. What do you think will happen when we kind of get there?
So I think a lot of these huge shifts get like overblown on the demo and then slowly over years, like catch up to the reality. So I think what's going to happen is when Sora is live, like me and you, our videos, the, like you said, the B-roll that we're choosing, instead of like story blocks, one person looking at the computer and like that's the only option, we'll have infinite options to enrich our storytelling. But I don't think, and I don't know how much of this is me just like hoping versus like my, I think this is my actual prediction, but people will interpret it as like we're just hoping because we're trying to defend our position. But I think you're not going to be able to replace that human storytelling aspect yet. Eventually you will, because they'll just train, like they'll take all of our YouTube videos, all of our shorts, and just train a model. But, you know, maybe there'll be attribution back to us for that. Like we'll get compensated. Potentially it'll take longer. My take is like the last frontier is trust and like depth of audience. So even if there's a Tiffin Tech 2 that can replicate you to the pixel and sounds like you and the pacing is like you, you have the blue check verified, and like at Tiffin Tech, people trust that name. If there's a million clones, they won't, the trust is not there for the clones. And so my guess is that that's why I've written about this. Like, I think it's so valuable if you want to be a creator to grow your trust and authority in this intermediate stage, because in 3 years, when there's 100 million creators that are all synthetic AI, the trust will still aggregate to the humans that people have trusted this whole time, you know, versus if you became a creator 5 years from now, I don't know how you're going to cut through the noise.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. It's all about that trust and building that relationship. And I think that's why, even with, for example, you know, your videos, you do sometimes where it's more so a recap of your weekend or different things like that. Like even before we started recording, I was like, oh, you know, I love seeing videos of your dog and your wife. Like I, you know, this is the first time we're speaking, but I know what you, it sounds weird, but I know a bit about your weekends and things like that. Right. I know you as a human at a very high level. I'm not saying, you know, but I know some of your interests or whatnot, and that builds a connection where with these AI kind of, however it ends up happening, that connection won't be there.
Exactly. Yeah. It'll be fascinating to watch, but if you're into tech at all, you got to be following you. So at Tiffin Tech, that's your handle on Instagram for sure. It's the same on TikTok, right? At Tiffin Tech.
TikTok and YouTube.
What's the takeoff URL so people can go if they're interested in subscribing?
So it's takeoff.com, but it's takeoff spelled TAEKOFF.com.
Perfect. All right. Awesome. Thank you so much for joining. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. It was great talking to you.
Thanks.